And welcome back to the WILO Party Line. We are at the midway point. Todd Berryman on this side of the board, Melissa Miller on the other side of the board, and hanging out with us on mic number three, microphone number three, mayonnaise jar, front porch, Funkin' Wagnalls. Sorry, channeling my inner Karnak. I don't know why. We've got Matt Stidham here, who, of course, is joining us, representing the Frankfort Police Department. He is the fire department chief. Always good to welcome another guest into the studio. And I'm gonna jump ahead, not doing directly from the question list, because there's something I'm curious about. And this may be more of a liability question, and you don't want to get into this, and that's fine. But okay. I want to throw it out there. I've had a lot of stories lately in the morning show about, for example, vehicle recalls where they'll talk about thus and so needs to be repaired because it's a fire hazard. But then they say your recall notice will be in the mail in April. They won't say something like leave your car stationary. Does that potentially create liability issues for an automotive manufacturer if they don't give you that fair warning to say you probably don't want to move the car because it's going to burst into flames?
You know, that's a good question. Honestly, you know, for us on our side of the fire department, it's not something that we usually kind of dive into very much.
Right.
It would be obviously very tedious for us to look at all of the manufacturers. So I would say for us as a fire department and as a liability for those who have the vehicles, mm-hmm. you know, pay close attention to what they're telling you and what type of hazard it is. Mm-hmm. I think there's going to be specific things that you would need to look for, especially when they talk about fire hazards. I mean, are they talking about, you know, something just kind of melting and mm-hmm. not functioning anymore, or are they talking a full-blown, you know, fire inside of the compartment area or mm-hmm. in the engine area? So I think, you know, for us at the fire department, that would kind of be where I would lean to. I wouldn't say that it's a liability. Mm-hmm. I would just say more the fact that you got to really pay attention to what details they're telling you about those vehicles.
Mm-hmm. And we welcome Matt Stidham, of course, the Frankfort Fire Department chief, filling us in on that. I apologize if I kind of got you out of another arena, but it is one of those things that I think about. Why would you not?
Sure.
And if it created paperwork issues on your side that were not accounted for, because I'm not going to name a manufacturer, but pick insert one if they get cued about it.
Right. And so, I think, and you know, for us and I think in the fire service in general, this doesn't deal with just Frankfort, it deals with everybody across the country and, mm-hmm. and even around the world, is that, sure. you know, part of our reporting systems that we do, we will specify if we have certain areas of a vehicle that may have caught on fire. Mm-hmm. That information gets sent to the federal government, which then can be relayed back to the manufacturer. So we do play a part in it, even though it may not seem as if we do. Mm-hmm. But each department, I think, plays a part with their reporting systems on what kind of fires and activities they're finding in these vehicles. Mm-hmm. And those go back to the federal government.
And I also do have to say, before Melissa jumps in, as we're talking to Matt Stidham, the Frankfort Fire Department chief, one of the things I appreciate is how amazingly, astonishingly quick y'all are about taking care of calls. A perfect example is we have had occasional, not really issues, but there's a tendency when we close the studio door, if the heat is on in the winter, sometimes it'll be a thing where you open the door and then suddenly the smoke alarms or the detectors go off because of the heat. And you guys, I mean, I know we're right across from a fire department branch, but you guys were knocking on the door within about 90 seconds saying, we got to go take a look. And I just appreciate y'all not only just saying, you know, well, Todd, we appreciate that you know that everything's okay, but we need to come take a look ourselves. So we appreciate the support of you just kind of keeping an eye out for everybody.
Yeah, and I'm very proud of everybody at the fire department. I mean, that's what we want. We want to see, you know, our responses pick up to where we're getting there quicker. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I pride myself in and our crews is that, you know, we don't just show up and you say, oh, we don't have a problem, we're going to leave. We want to investigate. We want to make sure that, you know, everyone is going to be safe and that there is not a lingering problem going on.
Yeah, so. I remember when your guys came in here and they took a look at that and they were taking measurements and they said, wow, 3,000 degrees. How are you even alive right now, Todd? This is a crematory in here. It wasn't exactly that bad, but it was like 115, 120, some number that really wasn't expected. I'll put it that way.
Absolutely.
So now we don't turn the heat on in the winter. That's we
all. Yeah, I can attest to that.
Yes. Yes, because we all have gotten, forgive the term, burned by that. So
Sure. Oh, jeez. I like the pun there.
Thank you. I try.
I know you and I have known each other for a very long time, and equipment is one of those things that is constantly evolving. A lot of people don't realize the equipment goes out of date, out of service date. And one of those big things that I'm seeing just even out in the county with some of the volunteer stations as well is that air packs, air bottles. And you and I have seen these things evolve from the great big 50-pounders that, you know, you're wearing 75 to 100 pounds on your back.
Yes.
Which is what I had to wear compared to the, like, little 20-pound compressed bottles and yep. everything. But that's a major concern for everybody. And I know you guys are looking at that, too.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things that I like to always point out, because I want to make sure that people in the communities understand, you know, the fire service is a different breed. Mm-hmm. And when I say that's a different breed, you know, things for us do expire. And when those things expire, they're not just like you go to the store and you pick up a $20 part and now they're back in service. These things cost thousands of dollars. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that, as you had mentioned, that we're running into is our air bottles.
Right.
You know, when we, air bottles last 15 years. And so every 15 years, they have to be taken out of service. And mainly that one of those big reasons is liability. You know, we don't want to have that liability of someone getting injured on a fire and then OSHA or, you know, the NFPA comes in and they say, hey, you know, these bottles are expired. This is why they were hurt. So, you know, for us in a safety aspect of it, we want to make sure that we keep up on these. One of the biggest things we ran into is air bottles. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people don't realize that air bottles have to be hydrostatic tested every 5 years. So there's increments in which these have to be tested. We went and started a new program at the fire department of an inventory program that goes through our reporting system so we can start to get a better inventory and start to plan for the future. Because I know that our city council doesn't like us coming in and saying, hey, we need $100,000 to replace this. They would rather us be able to give them a little bit more of a heads up. So that's one of the big focuses for me in my position is I want to make sure that we're working towards preparing and being more proactive instead of reactive. And I think that's one of the things that, mm-hmm. you know, we've always had to deal with in the past sometimes is that reactive. Oh, guess what? We're out of these. Now we need those. And when we go to the city, you know, they're like, hey, this is a lot of money that we need to spend. So things in the fire service just aren't cheap. I mean, mm-hmm. they're just not. I mean, you know, we've purchased some new fire apparatus in the last, you know, 60, 90 days. And the price of those have skyrocketed since the time I came on the fire department.
Sure.
So, you know, when it comes to the air packs, though, I think it's important for us. We're in a good place now. I won't say we're in the best place, but we're in a good place. We just got approval Monday night at the Board of Works meeting to purchase 10 more bottles. That will mm-hmm. get us back up to about where we was, we'll say, 6 months ago. So the goal is now is we're back on track. And we get these 10 bottles, we'll be back to where we was, like I said, 6 months ago or so, and then we'll be ready to move to the next project.
Now, is this something that you're going to try to, because we're talking about this the same exact thing at the volunteer level, and also, like you said, all of a sudden you're faced with the, oh no, we have 10 or 15 bottles that are all going to expire at the same time, and then you get that reactive process going along with it. Is this something that you guys are going to look at to be proactive, getting that into a rotation? And I know you can only rotate so much because technology changes and
sure.
and maybe equipment's not going to be available. And I know some of the volunteer organizations are finding that out as well.
Yes. And so it is. It's something that's what our inventory list is going to help us with. It's going to help us be able to identify a need, possibly even a year, even 5 years ahead of time, to say these are our needs that we're going to be facing. And so when we're able to go to the city council, to the Board of Works, and we're able to say, okay, in the next 3 years, we're going to have to replace these pieces of equipment. It's going to cost this X amount of dollars. We need to plan for that now versus, again, showing up, you know, at budget time saying, hey, I need an extra $100,000 to replace this. We want to be a little bit more stable and have a little bit more of that capability of showing the council where we're at, how we got to this point, and how we're going to move forward and get the equipment that we need. And in the volunteer service, you know, as you very well know, mm-hmm. I've, you know, been around the volunteer service my entire life. Even though I've never have been a volunteer, I've been around all of them and have, you know, huge respect for everybody in the fire service in general. But, you know, for them, I'm sure it is more challenging. You know, we have, you know, fiscal responsibilities here at the fire department that we're dealing with. And when you get to the volunteer service, I know it's difficult for them. So we always want to try to help them out the best that we can too. And sometimes, you know, it's not good to say hand-me-downs, but sometimes if we have equipment that is out, you know, that we can't utilize anymore or technology has grown, we have in the past over the last 25 years, we've mm-hmm. offered some of those to the volunteers sure. to say, you know, here's something that maybe you can utilize.
Yeah, and air bottles is one of those things that it wasn't necessarily air bottles that they weren't expired because you can't do that.
Right, right.
But you guys switched to the compressed bottle packs
yes.
before anybody else did.
Correct.
Because you were able to budget for that and kind of be proactive on that as mm-hmm. well. And so a lot of those bottles, I remember those bottles got divvied out to the different volunteer departments just and of course everybody's ecstatic because all of a sudden we have extra bottles.
Yeah.
So it was great. But
As we have, Matt, I just want to mention again, it's Matt Stidham, the chief of the Frankfort Fire Department. And if I can sidebar, and this is something I don't think this is specialist knowledge. It's something that somebody mentioned to me, but it's something I've mm-hmm. been curious about, and I want to kind of get your thoughts on this.
Sure.
And it's something that I have understood for a couple of years. When we had incandescent light bulbs,
mm-hmm.
it used to be, as I understood it, you could pinpoint the location that a fire had ignited because the filaments in the bulbs would all tend to point to the same direction. They'd all point to the northwest corner or something. As we've made our way away from incandescent bulbs and towards LEDs and things that do not have filaments, how much more has that complicated? I mean, I know it's environmentally good, but how much more has it complicated your ability to do an investigation on an arson or anything like that?
Well, you know, one of the things I will definitely say is I'm not an arson investigator.
Okay. So but I mean, just knowing where an ignition point
is. Yeah, but knowing where it is, you know, I think if you look at burn patterns a lot of times, you know, that's just one small element. Mm-hmm. So when you say, you know, about the incandescent lights and how they will pull towards where the heat was, you know, that's for us, that's just kind of one piece of the puzzle. So mm-hmm. when you go into it, and again, I've been around many of the investigators my entire career, when they go into a structure, they're not looking at one piece. There's mm-hmm. there may be 70 pieces of this puzzle. And they're looking at each one of those factors. And so for them, would I say that changing to LEDs and that because they're more efficient that it's caused us more problems with investigations? I would say no.
Okay.
I don't see that has really caused us a problem. It's just taken one element out of their investigation that they may not be able to use now.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I was going to say that that's kind of old school, but
this is knowledge from 20 years ago that I'm working with.
And that's the thing. I mean, that for me, that's part of it because that was one of the things that I was taught back,
sure.
mm-hmm. you know, buku years ago when I went through fire class and everything. But that's it because there's so many other aspects of it, like you said, mm-hmm. to follow that burn pattern. And a lot of it is, you can actually, I mean, you can tell if there's been an accelerant that has been used,
yes.
you can follow the wiring, you can, the actual burn patterns from where it may have started. It could have started back, you know, even in a total, what has always fascinated me was even in a total loss, which you hope you never have to deal with, but if there is a total loss, following that burn pattern from the front door all the way back to that heating element in the hot water heater, which is
yes.
what actually started it, mm-hmm. is crazy to be able to track that. And, yeah, it takes some major training and class time for that.
You're exactly right. And I'm always interested and intrigued by the way they can identify things. And it amazes me. I'll have investigators, you know, as the fire chief, they'll come to me and say, hey, here's what we think happened. Here's, you know, evidence that they have. And I'm always looking like, how could you pinpoint this to a plug-in on this side or a, you know, a cord for a cell phone? How could you pinpoint this? But they're so good at what they do. You know, we have a great arson team at our fire department, and they just do a great job. When they get called out, they're there, they identify things, and if they ever have questions, the state gets involved.
I almost have this imagination as we talk to Matt Stidham, the Frankfort Fire Department chief. I imagine the idea that it's almost like a Sherlock Holmes vibe. Like, it's like, well, how did you know that the fire started in the water heater? Well, this 10-pound can of pudding is curdled and there's a Corvette in the driveway.
There you go.
How did you intuit that because his left shoe didn't have enough polish that he'd committed the crime?
It is. And that's, again, it's one of the things, you know, that we try to entice our new members that we're, you know, we only have a few arson investigators anymore.
Yeah.
And once we lose those in the fire department, we don't have other firefighters step up into that role. We will not have an arson team here in Frankfort anymore. We'll have to rely on the state. And
well, and even at the state level, there are not near as many as what there used to be.
Yep.
A lot of them have retired out, and people have not stepped into those roles.
I was going to say, I didn't know if it was kind of a specialist level knowledge that your average fire department firefighter would not know. Like, do you have to train up at such an intense level, almost maybe collegiately? I don't know how that works, but.
I guess the way I would answer that question to you would be, I think you have to have a passion for it. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think the knowledge can come. If you get into the fire service and you start to understand, you know, fire behavior, that part will come to you to understand how a fire started. So I think it really becomes somebody who has to have a little bit of a passion to want to be a part of that. I think one of the biggest things that scares our younger generations now is the courtroom. I think that's where they get the most nervous, because I think any of our personnel could go out and be an arson investigator. I think they can, you know, show up on a scene and identify things. But it's that liability that they put on themselves, saying, I'm going to go to court and identify that this is what I believe happened, and this is how we're going to go through the legal process. And I think that I think that worries them.
Well, and you know, going back to the training side of it, you get a lot of that. I mean, I know there's more classes now. There
right.
used to just be firefighter one and two, and I know there's a lot more than that now. But just in those classes, just what I went through, you know, years ago, one and two, that you learn some of those aspects. You learn some of those things to watch for, because when you're in there and you're actually fighting the fire, you're also trying to preserve that evidence.
Yes.
When you're in there as well. So you go in, the first thing is protect life and protect belongings the best that you can. But then you also have to have in the back of your mind that you're trying to protect the evidence for that person's personal property and stuff, so that just for insurance purposes and stuff, you know, all of that lays in your back of your mind when you're in there.
And it does. And that's one of the things that, you know, we're trying to really promote at the fire department is increase our classes and doing different things. And one of the things that, you know, the mayor and Board of Works have been very supportive with me on is that, you know, when I first started, we went outside and did classes. You know, we went to IFD, we went to Fort Wayne, you know, all over the state, done classes, and we learned new techniques. And we kind of got away from that over the years to where we started trying to do everything more in-house. And so one of the things that we have really promoted, you know, since I've been the fire chief is, how do we get these individuals to go to some of these specialized classes, learn these new techniques, and bring those back to us? And I think it goes along with the arson. You know, we got a firefighter that's wanting to put on a class now on just how to preserve, you know, evidence, because he's an arson investigator. And those little things that we, you know, are integrated into our department a little bit more, having our younger generation teach classes to us.
Sure.
You know, and I know it's intimidating for some because they're like, you know, this guy's been on 25 years. But I can tell you that I don't have that mindset. I always want to learn.
I
want to learn something new. I want to learn new techniques. And I want to make sure that as we, as a department, grows, that we're growing in the right direction And we're growing in a direction that we're not just closed-minded, we're open-minded to new techniques.
Well, and it all goes back to the old adage, you know, work smarter, not harder.
Exactly.
And, you know, the smarter and with the technology that comes out and everything and the new techniques and the finance, all of that is constantly changing. And thank goodness that it is. You know, because I sure as heck wouldn't want you guys going in and doing what we did 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wouldn't, because I know how dangerous it was then. And I know that things have, it's not to say that it's not dangerous, because it is. It is one of the most dangerous professions out there. I mean, I've seen what guys have gone through.
Sure.
But why can't, you know, there has to be, with the new technology and everything and the new lessons learned
right
from those past years, that there's always a better way.
And I think as the, you know, older generation of firefighters, that's one of the things that we really need to do a good job with the young probationary firefighters, is let them know our experiences, mm-hmm. not just tell them this is wrong. But let them know why these things, you know, change.
Illustrate with an example so exactly. you can retain it.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and you was talking about equipment and stuff and what you've kind of going on with there. You know, one of the things we just received within the last couple of weeks is these new thermal imaging cameras.
Yeah.
We originally bought these to put on our RIT packs because we wanted to provide a RIT pack, that, which is a rapid intervention team, in case... those sure. of you don't know.
Thank you. I was about to ask.
But we put these
writ like clothing dye.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. But we bought these for this, and as our new training officer has went over these and looked, the technology in these are absolutely amazing.
Oh yeah.
I mean, this new, and you're going to hear me call it a tick, but it's a thermal imaging camera. These new ticks are handheld. They will outline now different things in a smoke environment. So it'll outline a person, it'll outline a desk or a couch, so that way you know where you're going, what's going on. And we found out that this new technology will Bluetooth to our air packs. So
oh,
if
wow.
a firefighter goes down in a fire and he has one of these, the pass alarm will activate. It will activate on everybody else's tick that has this technology. It will activate there to say this person is down. And then it will actually give us a direction. So I don't want to say it's not going to take us to that person, but it's going to say, okay, you're 30 feet, you're 60 feet, you're 90 feet away from that signal. Now, it's kind of like we talked about the other day. It's kind of like that hot and cold when you're a kid. You know, yo, it's mm-hmm. hot, it's cold.
That's what I was
this is
thinking.
What this technology will do is it actually, as you start to walk, it'll tell you the percentage of how much closer you're getting. If it goes down, you know you're going the wrong direction. So, you know, just this new technology that we received a couple weeks ago in these new thermal imaging cameras, it's a game changer.
Oh, no kidding.
It's very weird to me, that idea that a game that you played in childhood has that degree of relevance with
true.
The modern technology. That's almost brilliant.
Yes.
Not almost, it is brilliant.
Exactly. And how they sync up with the air packs. And again, you know, I want to make sure everybody understands. I'm not saying it syncs up with every air pack that we have
no.
in the department.
Right.
But whoever has that thermal imaging camera, they can sync that to their air pack. And so if they have a fire that day and they're carrying that, it all syncs together. I can see what air that person has on this tick now. It'll tell me if that pass device goes off on the tick and they only have 1,000 PSI, it will tell me this person who's got a pass alarm going off only has 1,000 PSI.
Yeah.
So we know the rush that we have to get there. We have to provide that air. So, you know, the things that, the way we're talking about training and arson and things evolving.
Sure.
I would have, you know, great technology, but maybe 20 years ago, I would have never thought that was going to be a big deal.
Yeah, I can go back further than that. When we first got the first thermal imaging camera,
yes.
and that was a major deal because, you know, Frankfurt had the first one.
Mm-hmm.
Because you guys, again, it goes back to the fiscal side of it. But Frankfurt had the first one. But then for us to get one on the east side of the county, that was like a game changer. We didn't have to call Frankfurt and say, please bring your camera.
Yeah.
You know, because that's what it was.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, granted, all the stations work together when they need to, and share equipment when they need to. It, you know, that's a given. That's part of the job. Mm-hmm. That's part of the service. But yeah, to have them now, I mean, that's nuts.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we were happy to be able to take it in and look at a furnace and see you know, where the hot spots were in the wall, you know, and it wasn't, we didn't get that kind of imaging. We just got the heat source and the temperature and stuff. So
yeah, it's very nuts. Very, very interesting.
That's crazy. I want to see that.
Well, you know, it's interesting because as we're talking to Matt Stidham, Frankfurt Fire Department Chief, it's fascinating to me that I hesitate to say that there were tells, but when you see technological innovations in other fronts and then you realize, you know, for example, remote sensing and how you had photos of Jupiter that were black and white in 1900. Sure. And in 2000, you could finally see the red spot. And now you can see the full color dynamic. Mm-hmm. The idea that or cars that have basically a glorified iPad in the dash. The idea that those same technological innovations could have some bearing that you're thinking, you know, this isn't just this one field. It could be a universal because certain aspects of this can be applied universally. Absolutely. To different little bits and pieces. So
yeah,
I love that.
And we do too. I mean, again, just seeing how the fire service has evolved. Mm-hmm. Again, I've been on there for a little over, right at about 25 years.
Yeah, and make me feel old.
Yeah, I know. Uh-huh. But, you know, it's just the things that has changed just in that amount of time.
Let's go back to when you first came on.
Yeah.
And you know, being a probie, and going through the trainings and everything, and now sitting through and seeing probies go through it and in that aspect of it. For as far as the training goes, even just the beginning training, how much has that changed for, and I know it's all changed for the better, but how much has changed just in your career?
Oh, I think, you know, when I first started, you probably had a book that had about 80 to 100 pages in it that said this is how you work in the fire service. You know, now we have educational things that are months long. You know, when I first took Fire 1 and 2, in the county of Clinton County, we were, I won't say I was one of the first ones, but we were one of the first groups to go through this Fire 1 and 2. Mm-hmm. And it seemed like it lasted us a year to go through this thing, you know, because it was new. But now, how things have evolved in new innovations, it's more that, you know, you can get through these classes now in 3 or 4 months. But the educational part of it has really increased.
Right.
With the evolution of how this training went. I think it's like everything. You start everything out and, you know, anything in life that you can think of, it takes you longer the first time to go through it. But once you start to kind of hone those skills in and be able to more focus on what is going to be the most important, I think you see it kind of, you know, condensed down a little bit.
We have a caller who has a question here for Matt. Kim, thanks for calling in.
Hi. Thank you very much. You're welcome, and I have a question. A few months ago in the paper, there was an article. It says firefighters fear chemicals in gear could be contributing to cancer. And, of course, this is out of Boston.
Sure.
But I was wondering, have you heard anything about that, or any of your fire people have any problems?
Yes, ma'am. So what we do know is that our gear is in environments that are not suitable for humans. And so what we have found over years, and not just us, but I mean, again, on the federal levels, you know, they have identified that this gear will still off gas for a long period of time.
Oh.
And so one of the new things that we have to look at is, number one, making sure our gear gets cleaned after fires or after we're in a hazardous environment. Mm-hmm. And number two, you know, when we start to design this new fire station, we want to make sure that we have a negative pressure room to be able to put our gear in. Mm-hmm. And so that is a focus of ours. Unfortunately, you know, our stations are so old that we don't have that capability to do that now. So our current gear is in our truck room, which is a better place for us than it is in our living quarters.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
sure. So that helps us out. But you're right. As far as cancer with firefighters from our department, you know, it would be something they would have to identify. It's something I couldn't identify. But I would say that it is possible. There's a good chance that we have probably had firefighters, you know, who has retired from the fire department, been around this gear and this off-gassing that takes place that could potentially have caused them to have cancer at some point.
Oh, my.
But it's unidentified.
Not surprised. Yeah. Not surprised, because everything you guys have to breathe in and everything. So, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, thank you for your answer, and I appreciate it. And everybody have a nice day.
Well, thank you. And you have a great day.
Thank you, Kim.
be careful out there.
Well, while we're on that, Matt, kind of explain a little more. I know what you're talking about, but maybe our listeners don't, about the off gas and what that process is when you're talking about the fire gear.
Okay. So one of the things to kind of keep in mind to kind of set this up so everybody can understand is, you know, once we started using a lot of synthetic materials in our homes, such as our furnitures.
Like nylon?
Yes. Well, that would be a good example. Polyesters, those kind of things. What happens is that burns at a different rate than what the typical, you know, hardwoods we would have in our furnitures. And so what that does, it gives off a gas. And that gas ends up getting trapped into the fire gear. Now, over the years, we didn't know that. Now that research has came and people have started identifying that there is high risk of cancer in the fire service from fire members, they've now learned that they had to look at different things. And that was one of the biggest things that they found, is that there is what they would call an off gas. So that means the material that gas would get into your fibers of your jackets or your pants. And then what happens is, over time, with temperature changes, humidity changes, it starts to release some of that chemical out into the open air. And that's why it is so important now, especially with new fire stations going in, if you could have those negative pressure rooms to keep those toxins out of not only your living quarters, but out of your truck rooms, and have a designated place for that.
Is there any research showing that just cleaning the gear?
Yes.
Helps remove all of that? Because I know one of the high points back in the day, one of the high points was when you guys got the washing machines and stuff that we could actually wash gear.
Yeah.
Because after every fire, it was loaded all up in the back of the truck and bring it in town and run everybody's gear through the washer.
It does help. You know, the certain types of chemicals that we can use as soap agents, mm-hmm. helps us get rid of some of those chemicals. So we do encourage it. And one of the things that we have implemented, you know, one of our firefighters designed a gear drying rack. And it's been amazing because now you can wash your gear, put it on there. And typically, as you very well know, mm-hmm. you know, back then when you wash your gear, it would take 24, 48 hours for it to dry out.
Oh, yeah.
Now they can put it on this rack and it'll dry out within 2, maybe 3 hours, and it's completely dry.
Oh, that's
so cool. That helps us out, again, quite a bit with that off-gassing and those gases. Mm-hmm.
That's pretty wild. Yeah, I remember those days. Bring the gear in and get it washed.
Too.
And it weighed 100 pounds when you took it back home, but at least it was clean.
Yes.
So, but yeah, I had seen, I'm glad Kim brought that up, because I had seen the articles on that as well. You know, we're talking about equipment and everything has an expiration date. Hoses, a lot of people don't realize. Yeah. You guys do a lot of hose testing because hoses wear out. They have expiration dates as well. Gear, we're talking about gear. What's the average lifespan on gear now? Because I know gear has an expiration date.
Yeah, and I think it's, you know, it's NFPA standards, and it's around 10 to 15 years is what they're going to say you have to replace your gear. But again, there's so many variables that go into that. I mean, you get a tear in it, it's technically not in service. You can't wear it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get too much heat on it, and it starts to discolor. Again, all of those factors will play into it. And we talked very briefly at the very beginning about how expensive things are. And just from the time that I started, you know, 25 years ago, we were looking at fire gear would cost you about $900 for mm-hmm. a set.
Yeah, that's what I was going
to
say.
I'm close to $4,000 to $5,000 per person mm-hmm. for a set of gear now.
Yeah.
And that's a big cost, not only to some of the personnel who have their gear damaged, but also to the city when we go and say, hey, we need 40 more sets of gear because these are expired. You know, and I think that's where I always like to try in my role is to educate our community, but a lot of times our community leaders, that the things in the fire service just isn't cheap. It's not like going out and buying a pair of jeans to put on and work in. I mean, you put on a pair of bunker pants right now, you're looking at $1,500 just for that pair of pants alone.
And depending on, you know, going back to the chemical agents and everything, depending on where you have to wear those at, there are some agents that you guys have to deal with that are not cleanable.
Correct.
And that gear is done. You know, somebody could wear a brand new pair of bunker pants into a chemical agent, and when they come back out, that brand new pair of bunker pants has to be trashed because there is no way to make them safe to wear again.
And one of the things that we are lucky, and you know this as well, is that, you know, spiller pays. You know, people hear that term sometimes, especially in the fire service. And what that is if we go on a bad accident somewhere, let's say on the interstate, and our gear gets exposed to a chemical that can't be cleaned, then that company is technically responsible for replacing our gear.
Right.
Now, as we all know, that doesn't happen overnight. They don't write you a check and say, here you go. Well, these individuals need their gear right now. So, you know, they're either going to have to spend it out of their pocket or, you know, the government agencies are going to have to help fund that, and then they get reimbursed for it. But, you know, we have had that multiple times just in the last 10 years where our firefighter has been exposed to chemicals at a factory on a car accident, and their gear is no longer in service and can't be used.
Yeah. And you can't – I mean, I know a lot of departments try to have at least a little bit of spare gear for that reason, but you can't fit everybody with spare gear because, nobody comes in a stereotypical size.
Correct.
So and that goes back to it too. You know, talking about equipment and we're talking about the what I want to call the smaller equipment. Let's talk about the bigger equipment. I mean, let's face it, fire trucks wear out.
Oh, they do.
And you got to do repairs on those, and they're out of service when you do that, and which puts more wear and tear on the other trucks in the fleet. I know you just finished up all the details on the new truck.
Correct.
But let's talk about the older trucks that are still sitting out there and, you know, still trying to keep the upkeep on them.
It is a lot of work, I can tell you that. So, you know, we've got trucks from 2006, you know, our aerial, they're 2005, 2006s. Our engine 3 currently is the same year, which is the one across the street. Center Township, obviously, purchased a new engine for Station 2, and then Engine 1 has been replaced. I think it's a 2016. What we are finding is, though, is that the maintenance on these vehicles are becoming very challenging because, to me, they don't seem like they're old technology. But because of the way the fire service evolves, they're telling me that a lot of these things are outdated and they can't get parts for them. And that's one of the biggest pushes that we've talked to the mayor and the Board of Works and City Council about was we've got to replace these trucks. The truck across the street at Station 3, again, most people don't know this because we do have another one of those spare engines. It's a sister engine to that one. Is that truck across the street right now was actually at the at the shop getting repaired since July. And we just got this thing back 30 days ago.
Yeah, roughly, yeah.
And it's all because of they can't source the parts. And we were at the manufacturer's facility. So it's not like we were at a, you know, mom and pop shop of trying to get something repaired. We were actually back at their facility and they couldn't get the parts. And it took this long for us to get it. So we're really running into that, as you said, with these trucks expiring. Because they do. You know, over time, they just get obsolete.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like, and again, if listeners are listening, I do love technology. But I also like the simplicity of things. And one of the things when I would say our old trucks from the 80s and 90s, you didn't have a computer. You didn't have it telling you what to do, how to do it. You had levers to pull.
Yep.
You had water that goes in and water that goes out. From my perspective, that's the greatest advantage for us. Now, I love the technologies that we move towards.
Right.
But I think when we look at apparatus, there's not a lot of technology from my perspective.
That makes it any better than what the old style was.
Correct.
I agree with you wholeheartedly.
Correct.
Wholeheartedly on that. Of course, we're talking to Matt Stidham, who's the Frankfort Fire Chief. And we're going over. Sorry, Cindy.
Uh-oh.
We're going over.
She came and gave us the eyeball.
Yeah, I know. But that's okay. I mean,
this is fascinating.
This is fascinating. It's great information for our listeners. And, I mean, we talk about the repairs to trucks and everything and not being able to get the parts. A lot of people will say, well, can't they get aftermarket? No, you can't because of those certifications.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not doable. Basically, if you go and you get aftermarket parts and you put it on a fire truck specifically, or even an ambulance, because we've done a lot of looking and a lot of research on this for the volunteer side of it, they're no longer certified, they're no longer covered by insurance, yep. So therefore, mm-hmm. basically, they're dead in the water.
It's like if I get something done involving a relay for a fuel injector or something in a car, I have it done aftermarket. If my car stops working because it's not precisely a good fit, mm-hmm. and they've got the square peg and the round hole or whatever, that's one thing. With this, there are lives on the line.
Right.
This isn't me just pulling over and grumbling and kicking the tires. This is,
yeah.
people
exactly.
can be dead as a result of
yeah,
this.
Yeah, exactly. So therefore,
aftermarket's understandably kind of a complication.
Yeah, even though there's sometimes when the aftermarket part is actually a better part,
true.
It's still not as far as federal government and all of that, because yep. I can say this because they don't pay my paycheck.
Right.
It's not, they don't like that. They will not allow that. So.
And we ran into that just seriously here recently within the last 30 days, last 60 days, one of our trucks had an issue, and we talked about trying to find another part that would fit and would work perfectly fine. But what we found out was they would no longer warranty that truck if we don't get the part and they install it. Our mechanic
right.
couldn't even install it. They had to do it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you run into that quite a bit in the fire service.
Okay, new truck. We already know that's a done-for deal, thank goodness.
Yep.
I think Mayor Judy Sheets was just as excited as anybody about
so.
About having that one done and in the books. But let's talk about new fire station. That's going to be a necessity, and I know that's already in the works. They're
yes.
trying to find the ground and everything. But are there specifics that you would like to see?
There's a lot. If we're talking about the design of the fire station, there is a lot, because what I'm looking for as the fire chief is I want something that's going to be sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want something that we're going to have to replace in 15, 20, 30 years. I want a building that's going to be there for another 100 years. So I think putting a lot of effort into the design to make sure it stays functional and provides for growth. And I think that's one of the biggest things at our headquarters. You know, it's a great facility, but we're kind of maxed out with the amount of personnel that we can have in that building. And so I want to make sure that this new fire station can withstand the growth of Frankfort over the next 70 years, and that we can add personnel and have room for those personnel and be a little bit more, proactive on the health and benefits for the firefighters. You know, the new station we have designed already to where the living quarters are going to be separate from any type of gear or any type of chemicals or hazards or the truck room. So you're not going to, have negative pressure rooms that you'll walk through to get into those to keep all of those toxins out. So for me as the fire chief, and I know as the city, and I'm talking the Board of Works, the mayor, the councils, we want to see something that's going to be sustainable for many, many years. I always tell the story, and I've probably told it here before at times, but, we got station was built in 1929, station was built in 1937, and our headquarters built in 1968. So as I told the council and our city leaders, we don't build stations very often. So when we build this, we want to make sure that we stay fiscally responsible. It's not a goal of mine to have a Taj Mahal out there of the finest, greatest things you can have. My idea is, how do we build a station that is going to be comfortable and sustainable for the future of the growth of Frankfort, and also save taxpayers, give the taxpayers the biggest bang for their buck?
Yeah.
And I think that with myself and the mayor and the Board of Works and our council, that we've really all worked together to say, how can we make this work, say fiscally responsible, but also make sure that we provide the best facility that Frankfort can provide to their firefighters. And I think that's the goal, and that's the most important thing for me looking at this project.
Yeah, I agree with you. And kudos to you for you guys for keeping that in mind. And that is definitely a necessity. Taxpayers are going to, they know their need is there.
Sure.
And we've heard that from callers. They know the need is there. But they, they also know that they can't afford to pay for everything all the time. So
that's right.
That's a great way to look at it. Of course, we're talking to Matt Stidham, Frankfort Fire Chief, And one last question before we get you out of here, because I know we need to let you go to work too. Anybody, you know, we talk about the longevity of firefighting and being in the service for so many years, but is there anybody out there that's getting ready to hang it up?
I am not quite sure. I have not personally heard of anyone. The only one that I can tell you is retiring right now is our mechanic. So Jeff Dunk, he is retiring effective March 5th.
Ooh.
He will be retired. So Friday will technically be his last day.
So has Jeff got a trainee?
No. One of the decisions from the city and our leaders was we was going to not replace our mechanic, and that so we may be using a lot of the street department to help us work on some of these, and then obviously the police department is going to help us work on a lot of our gas equipment. So that's kind of where we're leaning to right now, and we're going to see how it works. And if it doesn't work, that'll be the time
revisit
we go back
it.
To the city and revisit and say what we may need. Yeah. And I know you guys are about done, but I just want to tell everybody thank you for having
me on
today. I think we're getting the pressure to wrap this up. So thanks.
But it helps catch us up to speed.
Sure.
It's always good knowledge.
Sure.
And we'll have stuff for next time.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's great.
We love it. And thank you, Matt, for coming in. Matt Stidham, Frankfort Fire Chief. And we look forward to the next time around. And lots of great information. And maybe we can get into maybe some of the classes and stuff, mm-hmm. a little more detail.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yep.
All righty.
Thank you so much. All right. We're going to go ahead and put this one in the can, WILO Party Line. Remember, you can hear the 5 most recent episodes through the Party Line page at ClintonCountyDailyNews.com, BoonCountyDailyNews.com, and CarrollCountyDailyNews.com. 5 p.m. and midnight broadcasts right here on WILO and the vast treasure trove at HoosierLandTV.com. You smelling what I'm cooking here? It's not anything that's on fire. WILO Party Line. Take care. We'll talk soon.